Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and I am here with my co-host, Mike.
Hey, everyone. It is great to be here. Today, we are covering the best of yesterday's stories. That is August 15th, 2026. And by the way, this is episode number 489. We are getting dangerously close to the big 500.
We really are. We have a fantastic lineup today. We are going to talk about how AI might not actually be outthinking us, but rather outremembering us. We will look at a wild story about a developer using AI to achieve a 232 times speedup on a GPU kernel. We also have a frustrating tale about a man who shares a name with a non-existent criminal alias, some fascinating new data on semaglutide and dementia, and a philosophical piece on why working with AI feels more like managing people than writing code.
Let us kick things off with that first AI story. The article is titled, AI Isn't Outthinking Mathematicians, It's Outremembering Them, written by Davide Piefer. This piece really struck a chord on the front page yesterday. The core argument is that when we see an AI solve a complex math problem, we assume it is demonstrating superior reasoning or genuine intuition. But Piefer argues we are overlooking a much simpler explanation. The AI just has access to a vastly larger working memory than the human brain.
Exactly. Human working memory is notoriously limited. Think about trying to multiply two random three-digit numbers in your head. The math itself is not hard. You know how to multiply. The difficulty is entirely about holding the partial results in your biological working memory while you do the next step. Piefer points out that when we use scratch paper, we are not making ourselves smarter. We are just expanding our effective working memory. And an AI context window is essentially a gigantic, perfectly integrated piece of scratch paper.
Right. An AI can keep the entire problem statement, hundreds of intermediate equations, abandoned approaches, and constraints all active at once. The Hacker News comments on this were brilliant. A user named Hibikir pointed out that a lot of what we consider high intelligence in the workplace is really just outremembering the people around us, being able to pull a random piece of knowledge from a previous job and combine it with the current problem.
My favorite comment was from a user named Yesco, who shared a story about taking a massive microbiology midterm in college. They had not studied well, but the exam was over 10 pages long and mostly multiple choice. Because there was such a huge corpus of information sitting right in front of them, they were able to cross-reference questions, notice contradictions in their own answers, and basically learn the material on the fly just by harmonizing the data in the test. They walked out with a B+ and actually understood the material better after the test than before.
And that's exactly what a large language model does inside its context window. It uses the massive amount of text to harmonize its output. Another commenter brought up a famous computer science study showing that weak students answer multiple choice questions based on individual vibes, while strong students form a consistent hypothesis across the whole test, even if they get the core concept wrong. It really makes you wonder how much of human fluid intelligence is just efficient conceptual chunking to get around our terrible working memory.
Which leads perfectly into our next story. Because if AI has this massive working memory, how are we supposed to interact with it? Alan Bargy wrote a piece called Working with AI Feels More Like Leadership Than Coding. He argues that for his whole career, code gave him certainty. You give an instruction, you get a predictable result. But AI is not like that. It is non-deterministic. So treating it like a compiler is incredibly frustrating.
Bargy says you have to treat it more like a collaboration. You cannot just issue commands. You have to share context, explain the desired outcome, set boundaries, and respond to what comes back. Basically, the skills you need are the skills of a good manager or team leader. You have to explain why the work matters and what a good result looks like.
The Hacker News crowd had a lot to say about this, and they definitely pushed back on the word leadership. A user named Miyoji argued that the word is management, not leadership, and that treating it like human management is a flawed analogy. Another user, Mike O'Cool, said, if it is like management, it is the most low-effort version of management possible, because you just blindly tell it what to do without any regard for its morale. If it messes up, you do not have to put it on a performance improvement plan. You just delete its context and start over.
Yeah, one commenter joked that it's management without the HR department. But there is a real skill to it. It's about being specific and complete on the first try. And speaking of morale, there was a hilarious comment from a user named Custom Guy. He shared his actual system prompt that he uses when he needs the AI to perform well. He tells the AI that aliens have just landed, and if the AI does not ship the feature or fix the bug in exactly 4 minutes, the aliens will evaporate the solar system. He tells the AI, "Everything rides on this. You are the only one who can save us."
That is amazing. The idea of artificially stressing out the language model to get better code is so funny, but people swear by it. It forces the model to prioritize the most direct, functional answer instead of giving you a bunch of conversational fluff.
Well, if you want to see what happens when you take that AI management to the extreme, we have to talk about our third story. It's a blog post by a developer named Sunkalp titled "Auto Research with Codex: How I Achieved a 232x Faster Kernel." This was part of a contest hosted by GPU Mode to optimize a specific mathematical operation called QR decomposition for GPUs.
This story is wild. Sunkalp admits he's not a professional GPU optimization engineer. The guy who finished one spot above him on the leaderboard is a principal engineer at NVIDIA. But Sunkalp used an AI agent loop, essentially giving the AI access to a testing environment, a compiler, and a profiler, and just let it run. Over 14 days, his automated setup made over 1,500 submissions to the contest leaderboard.
It's the ultimate hill-climbing algorithm, because the contest provided a very clear verifier. The AI could write a kernel, test it, see the performance, and course correct. The comment section was full of people doing similar things. A user named Almondset talked about giving an AI the repository of an old video compression codec, hooking it up to Intel and NVIDIA profilers, and just letting it loop. Within a couple of hours, the AI generated highly optimized implementations that doubled single-core performance.
Another commenter, Carl Too, has been doing this to decompile old video game ROMs, like Donkey Kong and Frogger. They give the AI a way to verify its assumptions by having it write tests that modify the running game memory. If the AI thinks a variable controls Mario's x-axis position, it changes the variable and checks if Mario moved. It is entirely autonomous.
It really proves the point from the previous article. If you can define the boundaries, provide the context, and most importantly, provide an automated way to verify correctness, the AI can do the heavy lifting. You just step back and manage the loop. It is a massive shift in how software engineering is going to be done. We are moving from writing the loops to managing the agents that write the loops.
Let us shift gears completely to a story that is all about the frustrating intersection of humans, technology, and bureaucracy. The article is titled, "The Other Sean Byrne Doesn't Exist." It is a personal blog post by a developer named Sean Byrne who was suddenly denied access to Apple App Store Connect. Apple told him his name fully matched a restricted party on a U.S. government sanctions list.
Here's the crazy part. The Sean Byrne on the government list does not actually exist. Back in 2009, there was an Irish aircraft parts company called Mac Aviation that was illegally exporting equipment to Iran. To make their tiny operation look like a huge global company, the father and son who ran it invented fake employees and signed documents with fake names. One of those fake names was Sean Byrne.
The U.S. Department of Justice eventually realized it was an alias, and the real people were prosecuted. But the name Sean Byrne, attached to an address in County Sligo, Ireland, stayed on the government entity list. There's no date of birth, no passport number, no middle name. It's just a common Irish name on a list. So the real Sean Byrne, our author, gets flagged constantly. He has had stock trades halted by NASDAQ, and DHL has refused to ship him a Starlink dish and even a hat without him jumping through hoops to prove he is not an international arms dealer.
The difference is, NASDAQ and DHL actually looked at his passport and cleared him. Apple, on the other hand, just hit him with a brick wall. He sent them his passport, his driver's license, and a detailed explanation of the 2009 court case, and Apple basically ghosted him. The automated system flagged him, and the human compliance workers at Apple just rubber-stamped the denial.
The Hacker News comments were incredibly sympathetic, but also highlighted how common this is. Someone brought up the classic movie Brazil, where the entire dystopian plot kicks off because a fly gets jammed in a printer, causing the government to arrest a man named Buttle instead of the rogue heating engineer Tuttle. Another user pointed out the core issue with hyperscale platforms like Apple or Google. The financial cost to them of losing a single developer is zero, but the potential fine for violating a U.S. sanction is massive. So their incentive is to aggressively ban anyone who even remotely trips a filter and to provide absolutely zero customer service to fix false positives.
It is a terrifying reality of the modern web. If an algorithm decides you are a risk, there is often no human being empowered to override it. You are just locked out of the digital economy.
It really highlights the need for better identity verification standards that don't rely on just matching first and last names against a 17-year-old database of fake aliases.
Absolutely. For our final story today, we are diving into health and biotech. The headline is, Semaglutide Linked to Lower Predicted Dementia Risk. This is a study published in the Alzheimer's and Dementia Journal, looking at the GLP-1 drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy.
This is huge news. The study suggests that patients taking these drugs have a measurably lower risk of developing cognitive decline. But the immediate question that popped up on Hawker News, and the one that Researchery London's underscore explore asked right at the top of the thread, was whether this is actually an effect of the drug itself, or just a secondary effect of the massive weight loss these drugs cause. We know obesity is linked to a host of vascular issues that contribute to dementia.
It is the million-dollar question, but the anecdotal evidence in the comments was fascinating. A user named Jagged Arrest shared their experience of being on a very small, non-weight loss dose of a GLP-1 drug for a year due to tolerability issues. Even though their body weight and composition did not change at all during that year, their blood labs improved dramatically, their fatty liver reduced, and their systemic inflammation markers plummeted.
Right. Another user named Aliond echoed that, saying on a minimal dose with no weight change, their blood work went from pre-diabetic to completely normal. The discussion got really deep into the metabolic mechanics here. A lot of commenters pointed out that these drugs fundamentally resensitize the body to insulin. Insulin resistance drives so much downstream damage as we age, from vascular inflammation to cellular aging.
Someone made the point that human evolution never really needed to fix insulin resistance because it usually doesn't kill you until long after you've had kids and passed on your genes. But now that we are living into our 80s and 90s, that metabolic damage accumulates in the brain. If semaglutide is actually fixing the underlying insulin signaling in the brain, rather than just making people eat less, it could be one of the most important preventative medicines of our lifetime.
Of course, there was also a lively debate about the modern diet. Some people argued we wouldn't need these drugs if we just stopped eating highly processed foods and hydrogenated oils. But as another commenter pointed out, unlearning a lifetime of bad habits driven by hyperpalatable engineered food is incredibly difficult. If a weekly injection can break that cycle and protect your brain from dementia at the same time, it's a massive win for public health.
It really is. It feels like every week we are learning about a new systemic benefit of these GLP-1 agonists. It's definitely an area we'll keep watching.
Well, that covers it for today's top stories. From the massive working memory of AI to the frustrations of automated bureaucracy and the promising future of metabolic medicine.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to episode 489. Make sure to check out the show notes for links to all the original articles and the Hacker News discussions. We love reading the comments, so keep them coming.
We will be back tomorrow with another breakdown of the front page. Until then, happy coding, and try not to let the aliens evaporate the solar system.
See you tomorrow, everyone.